Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Oh, yeah! Welcome back to another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. I am your host, Viper, the man about tech, executive producer of social media here at the IQ. And you know, today we're going to talk about something that I think a lot of creators encounter at some point in their creative journey. And that is imposter syndrome. That feeling of you not truly belonging or not deserving of the success that you achieve on YouTube for whatever reason. Now, a lot of times this comes down to self-confidence and lack of self-esteem, lack of confidence, different things like that. But I think we all feel imposter syndrome at some point or another as content creators. But there's a way to kind of live with it or even kind of get over it and still continue on your path to content creator glory. And that is why this week's guest, Mrs. Angelique Stidham, is going to join us in a moment to talk about overcoming imposter syndrome. I think this is going to be a good conversation for all of you all to listen to. So let me be quiet, bring Angelique here, and let's roll to the podcast. Welcome back to Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. And this week we have a special guest. We have a marketer, a brander, a creator. We have Angelique Stidham in the building. Hey, Angelique, how you doing?
I'm doing so good. Thanks for having me, Viper.
Thank you for making the time. I appreciate you. So, first question I usually ask people when they come on the podcast, Angelique, what brought you into the YouTube space, the creator space?
Well, I guess I've been a creator for a long time as a photographer, videographer, then marketer, right? Like, you're creating constantly. So the creator space has actually existed far before it became like labeled as YouTube or social media, right?
Right.
So I've already been here. What brought me on YouTube was serving. I saw an opportunity to serve in a different way and the opportunity to serve more people than what was possible just behind like a Facebook group. So that was initially what had launched me into a YouTube channel. I had no desire to be on the other side of the camera. I was behind the camera, right? I had no desire for any kind of, I would have said, I don't want the attention. That's what I would have said before of all the excuses of why I hadn't gotten out before, because I could have had a marketing channel a long time ago, right? When I had my agency and all kinds of other adventures that I'd been on with photography and videography. If I wanted to just have a YouTube channel, I would say that the pull for me was serving. Having the opportunity to reach people and help them where they are and at least bring them up to where I was, help them as far as I could help them. That was where YouTube was. I mean, I don't think anybody needs to argue that YouTube is the best platform to do that.
Speaking of serving, I know that you have your own YouTube channel, but these days you are more so helping out your husband with his YouTube channel where you guys, I think you said, live stream twice a week, right?
Yep. We live stream every Sunday and Wednesday. This has been a journey for me because doing videos is one thing. I was more comfortable with being behind the camera, recording videos, and then editing them and uploading them. That was the workflow before. But my husband hated that process, like literally was begging him to do videos. And he was just appeased me by throwing me like a bone every now and then he'd do some videos. But this was really frustrating for me because I knew that what he had to offer, the information that he had for people, like they needed to have this information. And his, I would say, imposter syndrome, his battle with imposter syndrome, why me, right? Why would people want to listen to me? He didn't understand his own value in the beginning. And so I pushed and pushed and pushed. And finally I said, you know, when you get in front of a stage, when you get in front of a group, when he goes to present, at live events, he is so natural and everyone is engaged because he's just himself. So where else can you do that? Live streaming. So I said, maybe we should live stream instead of, you know, forcing this video, because he was very robotic on camera. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is not translating the same. The second that we started live streaming, he loved it. And we've been doing it ever since. We started last May together over on his channel. And I just kind of started off in as his co-host. But the truth is, there was an opportunity for me to serve in that space too. So we've built a community over there and it's a vibe. We absolutely love it. It does not even feel like work. We're creating videos before absolutely felt like work. And this just feels like we're building a family.
That is amazing. Now, what type of content does your husband do? I think he's into the financial stuff, right?
Yep. He's a retirement income strategist. So I wouldn't say he's not a financial advisor and he's not a retirement planner by definition. He helps people and links them to vehicles. The whole mission behind our business is to help people become self-directed so that they can make confident and educated decisions. So it's less about you need to know, you need to rely or depend on him. It's more of allow us to teach you so that you can put this information into play for yourself. There's many ways to 10, right? Many ways,
right.
5 plus 5 or 1 plus 9, or there's many ways to 10, and not everything is one size fits all, specifically like financial planning. So this is why we feel like it's the Each One Teach One method, that we make learning fun. We make it easy. And for a lot of people, this is just intimidating. So our goal is to help them become self-directed so that they can learn on their own.
That is amazing. I want to go back to what you said before about the reason why you were drawn to YouTube, because of service. This is something that I tried to explain to creators here on the vidIQ airways about when you're first starting out on YouTube. Yes, you want to do YouTube because it's a way to express yourself, show your personality and get your videos out there to the world. But if you want to grow on YouTube, you have to grow in the act of service. You have to serve the audience, the viewer, figure out who they are, what they want, what they need, and figure out how you can fill that gap that they don't have, give them something that they can't get anywhere else. So can you talk to us a little bit more about how you got comfortable serving the audience and ultimately use that to build your audience for you and your husband?
I think it comes down to who you are. It's YouTube, right? So it's really more about you. When he was recording videos, he was performing on camera, right? It did not feel natural to him speaking to nobody, just a camera, right? It was not a natural process for him. And so therefore, there was nothing to connect with because he was not being his authentic self. Mm-hmm. If we were to, even on my own channel when I was active over there, if I were to only be doing content that I thought was going to perform, even if it was valuable information, but I wasn't like locked in, right? That's the part that people connect with, I think, is that that unique piece that's about you. There may be 100,000 other videos that talk about this topic that cover the same material, could be the exact same points, but for some reason, they prefer coming from you. They enjoy it coming from you, and there's just something that resonates. Here's why that's important. There are like billions of people, right? And I think we get caught up sometimes in watching, whether if it's competitor channels or what our worldview is and how big or small that is. For us, we go, there are a lot of people out there. Do we need to compete with other people? No, because what we're doing is we're saying, out of all of these people, what we're trying to find is our tribe. And there are a lot of people out there who will vibe with us. And we are okay with if those are the people that we attract, and we are not attracting everybody. I wouldn't say that we don't want to be a Mr. Beast size channel. I wouldn't say that we're limiting ourselves in that way. However, we see the power in helping one. So even if it's one person attending on our live stream, that's enough for us to be just as passionate as if there were 100 or 1,000 tuning in, right? We would be the same thing, because it's not about them necessarily. It's not about us. It's about a goal and a mission that we have to serve. the information that we want to get out there and how we like our perspective on this and what we hope, like the impression that we hope to leave on the world, right? So making the world a better place, I think, is at the root of that. If you don't have some sort of center there, then it gets really easy to get caught up in a lot of the things that really don't matter, like your background or your gear or something like that. I think having a grounding, like a foundation for why you're even turning on the camera, why are you showing up? When you are centered in that, really footed in that, I feel like it doesn't even feel like work. You are excited. You get to do it versus you have to, right?
That is an amazing point, because we talk about how creators are going to struggle on YouTube, because YouTube is a marathon, not a sprint. So you have to really be locked into that mission statement, to what you were talking about, because that mission statement and your goal is what's going to keep driving you forward, even when people are not watching. Because when you are a new creator, there are going to be a lot of times where you put out content that people don't see or don't watch because you're relatively new and your content is just not out there yet at a level where you're going to be discovered. But if you keep being consistent, keep your eyes on your mission statement, your goal, and you do it over and over again enough times, at some point, someone will notice you, and then things will begin to click. You'll begin to grow that audience, and then they'll buy into your mission statement, and then things just begin to take off. And I think that's pretty cool about YouTube.
Yeah. I attribute it to, like, if you're going somewhere, if you were going somewhere, if you're leaving your house and you're going somewhere and you just kept driving around and you never saw that the store, the type of store that you wanted to go and shop at, right? Or the destination that you wanted to go, that would be a pretty wild way of addressing, right? Like,
right.
That would be pretty wild to just, like,
you run out of gas. You will run out of gas.
Just drive around forever, right?
Right.
I think that a lot of the people, they try to create a map. They try to tap into some GPS, like some tools to help them, you know, guide them along. This is where I want to go. How do I get there? And so they say, okay, well, you've got to go. Like, if I'm in Arizona and you're in New York, then clearly I got to go towards New York, not towards California, right?
Right.
If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And having a goal in mind helps process what the events that happen in the meantime. So for instance, if you understand that it's probably going to be a journey, that this isn't just down the street, then when you are running out of gas, you're not saying to yourself, oh no, this is as far as I've gotten. You say to yourself, I've got to keep the gas tank full, right? So that I can keep going. If you are realizing that, oh, I took the wrong exit, and so now I have to detour to get back on track to be able to head in the direction that I need to go so I can reach my destination. You're not saying, oops, I took the wrong exit, so now I got to quit because I made a mistake, right?
Right.
You take the detour and you understand that it's just part of the process, because you want to arrive at your goal so much, you believe that it's possible so much, that these things of having to refill the gas tank doesn't feel like I ran out of gas. That's the end, right?
Right.
Yep. It doesn't feel like if people aren't liking my video or if people aren't attending, that I'm the problem, right? I got to put more gas in. I might need to put different gas in, right? I need to take a different road. It becomes just part of the journey versus these are the things that I'm going to take and make a deciding factor on who I am and where my value is. Cause I think that's where a lot of people get caught up, is they assign metrics, analytics, these vanity metrics to their worth. And it's hard not to do that, but that is exactly what helps and aids that sense of imposter syndrome. And I actually have a love-hate relationship with that word. I don't think that that we approach our goals, that we map them out or even list them like vision boards or whatnot. I don't think that we approach them from a sentiment of we are absolutely no matter what going to achieve them. They're more like options. And I think that's the difference there of like, are you actually going to achieve this? Or are you saying that you want that? But if something were to happen and you had a bad week, it might take you out and then you might just not go there. Those are options. So it's different for everybody, how you set your goals. And I feel like I'm getting off topic here a little bit because I'm wanting to lead into that imposter syndrome, but it's making those decisions and those markers along the way and not taking them personally really is what I think the lesson is in being on YouTube.
Right. Look, as YouTube creators ourselves, we've all been there. Sometimes the next video on your weekly upload schedule is right around the corner, but you have no idea what you're going to record. Well, this exact situation is why vidIQ developed Daily Ideas. It's our newest tool that can help provide you with up to 50 new video ideas every single day. Your daily ideas are generated by our AI, which analyzes your channel and the wider YouTube community to find trending topics with high view potential. With this new tool, you'll never run out of great ideas for new videos. You can try Daily Ideas for yourself today by downloading vidIQ at vidIQ.com.
So, we're driving that way. We're heading that way. So let's just keep going that way. Let's talk about imposter syndrome. So if you look up imposter syndrome on YouTube, or not on YouTube, on Google, it says imposter syndrome is a behavioral health phenomenon described as self-doubt of intellect, skills, or accomplishments among high-achieving individuals. So basically, if you are a creator, and let's say you're a small creator, and one of your videos blows up and goes viral and it gets a million views or whatever the case may be, you might have a sense of imposter syndrome because you feel like you shouldn't have made that video, or you don't deserve those views. That's basically what we're talking about. You feel like you don't deserve the success that you get compared to your peers and different things like that. So I want to talk to Angelique. I want to talk to you about how do we like either live with imposter syndrome or overcome it, because we had this conversation in a different space a few days ago. And I remember you saying that you don't really beat imposter syndrome. You more or less learn to live with it and exist with it, but still reach your goals and achievements.
Yeah, I think there's a difference, and that's why I have this love-hate relationship with this word. Imposter is somebody who is trying to deceive someone. Mm-hmm. So that's not usually used in the term imposter syndrome when people are throwing it around, right?
Right, right.
What we're actually experiencing more of is being self-conscious, so self-doubt. It's that self-doubt piece in that description that you just read. Mm-hmm. Who am I to be in this space? Why would people listen to me? That's more of that self-doubt piece. We are looking for the proof. We're looking for proof that we should be here. We're looking for proof that people want to listen to us. We're looking for proof that we have value. Now, the opposite of that is that sometimes people don't have a lot of value, but they want the attention. And so they are trying to convince people that they have a lot of value, but really they are suffering from imposter syndrome because they know it's not true. They know that they're not an expert. They know that they're not entrepreneur of the year. They know that they are not at the level that they are pretending to be. Mm-hmm. I heard something powerful recently, and I'm going to just go ahead and speak on it right now. Yeah. Okay. Now this was, whether you have a religious preference, it doesn't matter. I'm not a religious person. So if you were to say, I want to go to Venice Beach, right? Mm-hmm. I want to go to Venice Beach. And you put in the GPS Venice Beach, and it wanted to use your current location, but you were pretending that you were somewhere where you're not currently.
Right.
Are you going to get the right directions?
Nope.
No. But so many people are putting their current location at some place that they aren't currently. Now, if we were just honest and said, this is where we are, then we could get the information, and the universe would send us those confirmations from where we are to get to where we want to go. But a lot of people are putting in the wrong address in their current address. That is imposter syndrome for sure. Because then when things aren't starting to line up, we try to cover them up. We don't want people to see that we're human and that we make mistakes, right? And we just keep digging the hole deeper and deeper. Battling that alone, you're battling yourself, because you're really conflicted. I want to be here, so I'm going to pretend that I'm already there instead of saying, I want to be there, so I'm going to make that my first destination, and then I'll go to where I like the ultimate goal, right?
Right.
Mission Beach or Venice Beach or wherever. This is why we give away this book, because knowing where you are, it's crucial to understanding where you can go. And I think just being honest with yourself of how to manage the process and understanding where you are in your relationship with your confidence, with your value, how you feel about yourself is more important than how other people feel about you. Because subscribers, likes, views, those kinds of metrics, they come and go, and they're not always consistent. So if we're looking for that constantly as a marker to verify or validate our value, then we are chasing a carrot always, right? And in all ways. But what we were talking about in the room the other day was this book right here. And we buy extra copies for people who...
Before we go any further, this is an audio podcast that lets people know what book it is and who the author is and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah, my bad. It's How to Be Your Biggest Fan by Renee Cermak, The Value and Power of High Self-Esteem. Now, I went to a class of hers. It was like a workshop, and she took us through this exercise. And the exercise was to list things that would impact you in a negative way, your self-esteem. All of the things that run through your head that you go, I shouldn't have done that, or I wish this would be different, right? All of those things. It could even mean something like you're supposed to go to the dentist every 6 months, but you don't, right? That weighs, it's like logged in the back of your head of like things you should be doing to feel good about yourself, to take care of yourself, and you're not, right? She had us write this whole list. And then she has like in this book is this system of scoring yourself. When I did the quiz with her, and it's in this book too. When I did the quiz and realized what my score actually was, I was like, wow, I have to fix that. How do you fix it?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people want to fix it with looking a certain way, right? You can look like you fixed it.
Or be perceived a certain way.
Yeah, you can look like you fixed it. And as long as you have other people convinced, you almost have convinced yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the important piece around what I learned in this book anyway, this is a starting point for me. The important piece was there is a framework around how to address that. And once you have some rules to follow, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, right? The steps that she takes you through in this book really have you looking at yourself in a completely different way. Now, here's what I noticed right away. There's like a list. One is deposits and one are withdrawals, right? These are the things that I do to feel good about myself that boost my confidence. These are the things that decrease my confidence. If you were to write a list out right now, the majority, 99.9% of people, that list of what decreases confidence would far outweigh what boosts confidence, right?
Right.
But that list continues to grow. And so when we have things and we're adding things on there, we already probably are carrying around a list that's like as long as Santa's list, right? Scroll that just could roll on forever. The list of things that we do to boost our it's changing all the time, but the list that are withdrawals don't change. They only get added to.
Okay, Angelique. So I think when it comes to imposter syndrome, the biggest problem is that we allow the negative list, the bad list, to grow and grow. And it usually grows because of the way that we feel like other people perceive us, or things that actually happen in our day-to-day lives that negatively impact our self-esteem. So I guess the real question, Angelique, especially as it relates to overcoming imposter syndrome, is how do we kind of make that bad list mute or less relevant and focus more on the positive list, the things that give us more self-esteem?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll walk you through the steps in this book because I'm not trying to take credit for anything, right? This is... There are amazing tools out there, but again, you could read this book all you want. You could read it 3-4 times. If you don't put it into action, it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
Before I give you the steps, tell me some of the things, like give me some examples of that, the negative list.
You mean what, in general or?
Yeah, just in general. Yeah.
Hell, people talk about appearance. They talk about the way you talk, your video thing you can't edit, your thumbnails are bad. Like, it could, I mean, the list could go on and on and on for a creator.
Yeah. And what do you think would improve? Because you've been, like, recently you've been in improving your thumbnails, right? And really focused on that. So what do you think is, like, the gateway or the bridge to this? These are my thumbnails and I can make better thumbnails.
I think for me personally, what I did was I identified within myself that my thumbnail could be better. I identified that as an area of improvement. So to improve that area, I sat down for 5 hours one day and I took a Skillshare course on Photoshop, because I know that Photoshop is the best photo manipulation program out there. And most of the top level thumbnails on YouTube are created with that Photoshop program. So I knew that I didn't know how to use Photoshop. And I figured that if I could learn how to do Photoshop, I could make better thumbnails. So I sat down for 5 hours one day and took a Skillshare course in Photoshop and ultimately came out so much better. But here's the key. I came out much more confident in my ability to create better thumbnails because of that knowledge that I just received. To your point, the deposit. So a lot of it is just confidence. And if you don't have that confidence, doing what you need to gain that confidence, so the negative list doesn't affect you as much as the you can add to the positive list.
Yeah. When you talk about that, you learn the skill, right? The ability, like the capacity that you have to have in order to sit down and learn a skill in pursuit of improving requires a certain amount of confidence that you can do it, right?
Right.
Okay. And so a lot of people are coming, like if this is a bank account, managing your deposits and your withdrawals would really matter if this was a bank. We all get that part. Mm-hmm. But we don't do that for ourselves. And so a lot of us are bankrupt and we're operating with negative cash flow, right? Every single month we are in the negative and our debt in confidence just continues to pile up because that list of negative things consistently is compounding all the time, especially with social media. And you put yourself out there and it's a vulnerable place, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just compounding. So we try to focus on the list of deposits so that it can at least put something back in the account, right? Like make us at least bring the balance to zero, if not, if anything, like at minimum. The impact that reducing the negative list, the withdrawals, is far outweighs the deposits. Mm-hmm. So having the confidence to do something positive could almost mean that you think that you're going in to make a deposit. And if it doesn't work out and you don't get that receipt that says, okay, I've deposited, right, into my self-esteem, it almost acts as a double withdrawal. Mm. You have to be able to afford that, right?
Right.
So for you going and sitting down, you're going, oh yeah, I can afford that. It's not going to, I'm not going to get a bounce fee if I don't win. If I don't sit down and kill it at thumbnails the first try, there's no, what's it called? A bounce check fee or whatever it's called, right?
Overdraft.
Yeah. So there's not going to be any other consequence to this transaction that I'm about to do. If you are too far with you're not managing your withdrawals, no different than subscription fees, right? They can get out of hand. We have to address those. The only way to address those is to make a list of them. And some of them are so small, you do not even realize how impactful they are for your day. For instance, making your bed every day. Especially if you work from home, you don't make your bed, you go into the room, every time you walk by, you see the bed unmade and it's a withdrawal. You could have up to 6, 10, 20 different withdrawals on the same item every single day. So how powerful is it to know I can just remove that in 5 minutes? Mm. That's a start. The second one is making an itemized list so that you can start to keep track and budget, right? So how, what does your account look like and what can you address? Some of these things maybe it take longer than others. For instance, appearance, you had mentioned appearance. Appearance would be something that we can improve upon. But the other part is a lot of us are comparing ourselves and we wish to be like other people because we think we could get a deposit if we had the approval, right? The validation of other people.
Right.
And that's tough. I spent a lot of time telling myself, if I can't accept myself for where I am right now, I don't really love, and I can only accept myself if I look a certain way. Is that loving yourself? And I posed that question a few years ago, and it was really difficult because I had gained a ton of weight. You know, my challenges with health and whatnot, I've shared a lot of those, especially in regards to losing my vision. But one thing I've had to learn is how to celebrate me. Mm-hmm. Not compare myself to others, but celebrate myself. Yep. And I think this is where a lot of list of withdrawals starts to fade away. Because we're not having the pressure of other people and what they think. We are not tied to a system of validation in the same way. And so it starts to melt away. When we can say, I can celebrate me, regardless of what other people's achievements are, I know it's me against me, right? Just me against me. And we're our own worst critics and can be our own biggest fans. And that's why I love this book so much, is because it really doesn't talk about what highly successful people are doing or something like that, where you're constantly comparing yourself, like you're in this race with other people. It's really like putting up a wall, almost like this immersive experience. Like you've been talking about the Vision Pros lately a lot, right?
Right.
This is an this immersive experience with just you. Like you got to go inside and you have to look at yourself and you're sitting with you. And making more time for that. So I think that if more people were to do that, they would come from a place, they would create from a place, right? That is so valuable for them that other people will then be able to connect with that content. So whatever the topic is, it doesn't matter if it's important to you, if it's valuable to you, if you understand why you're doing what you're doing and you are able to manage your bank account a little bit better, then it's easier to keep going. It's easier to accept criticism too, or just have it roll off your shoulder. But it's easier to battle yourself, or less battling of yourself, I guess.
Okay. So here's the main question then, because to your point, I feel like a lot of what we lose self-esteem on comes from the thoughts and opinions of other people. And to your point, comparing ourselves with other people. So how do we detach ourselves from those expectations out there that we have very little to no control over and just point that energy inward? Because I see a lot of this online, you know, creators, they get mad because maybe a brand sent out a review unit to one creator, but not them. And instead of worrying about what they can do to become a better creator, they are spewing toxicity and negativity to that creator that got the deal with the brand. So how do we detach ourselves, Angelique, from the thoughts and opinions of other people and turn that focus into ourselves to build a better us?
Well, I'll start with, if we're not growing, we're dying. And I think a lot of people have something called arrival syndrome. They feel that that's where the expectation would come into play of something that's owed to me or it's not fair, right? We have arrived at a certain status, or we have arrived in a certain place, or we see ourselves as this status that's going to, we need that deposit. Again, it all comes down to the deposits. If the brand doesn't send me something, then now it's a withdrawal because all of our system is tied to other people. And that's, we have to sever those cords. Mm-hmm. We have to do that. We cannot put ourselves in a place where we have this expectation to get views or to impact others. Like it's a privilege and an honor to be impactful regardless. The fact that people could trust you enough to be influenced by you is a privilege. Mm-hmm. But once we have arrival syndrome, it means we don't need to learn anything else. Right? It means we are above or we have learned and therefore we stop growing. But at the core of that, I feel like is that confidence piece. A lot of people tie that sense of confidence to this is my status. I have arrived here. I have earned this. I'm going to wave this flag because I've worked really hard to get it. I've worked really hard for my account balance to look like this. And as long as this continues to go on, my account balance will be in the black, right? But the second that one of those strings gets pulled in the wrong direction, now I'm in the red. And it's not my fault. And it's not fair. This is the algorithm conversation, right?
Right.
And I just feel like if we all were more responsible about our own bank account, emotional bank account, then we would be far better off. So that's, I guess that's what I have to add to that.
Gotcha. So you were going through the fourth step in the book. I think you hit one and two. So what's three and four?
Yeah. So first is knowing your balance, right? Then reducing your withdrawals. So having like a running list, like you have this written down so you can remind yourself to be aware of these things because a lot of these things are happening subconsciously, right?
Right.
So first it starts with understanding your balance. Then it starts with what it is that you believe. What do you believe about yourself? What do you believe that's possible? Or do you believe, will you believe when you have the proof? For instance, I believe that my husband has figured something out I've never heard anybody else talk about. The way that he has plugged things together is different. And he saw something I don't think a lot of people have seen. Now, do I think that he's the only one? No, but he's the only one I know, right? And I think he's a genius for figuring this out. The issue is that he didn't want to get out and get on camera, right? He was like, why me? I can't force him and I can't make him believe that his what he's done is valuable to other people and that they would want to listen to him. I couldn't. He now has the proof. So as he started to see the proof, then he started to believe, right? But I already believed. I already knew. So when I was showing up, I was like, I'm bringing 100K energy. So taking inventory on what you believe so that you, then why do you believe that? Did somebody else give that kind of belief system to you, or is that something that you adopted on your own?
Yep.
And then there's your beliefs lead to your actions and behaviors lead to your habits, and then that leads to results. But really, the steps that are involved here all lead back, are all tied to that list and managing your balance.
Yeah. And I think the important thing to your point is having that list be visible somewhere. So me personally, I can remember things better when I write them down or leave a note in my iPhone notes app so I can look at it visually and see it. And I can remember it more when I physically write it or type it into my notes app, because then I guess my brain has that memory of actually inputting the thing that I want to do. So being able to input that and see that like in the visual world, it's very important for me personally to understand that, all right, I made this goal or step, and this is what I'm going to do moving forward, because this is what I have determined that I need to do, and I'm putting that out into the world physically.
Yeah, I'm a list maker. I make a lot of lists of things, but it's just to get it out of my head. So I think to your point, like if I am just thinking about it or I keep it in my head, then I'm more likely for it to be kind of out of sight, out of mind. So I do like to do that. Having that list though, having that out so that you can start to identify how to change your routine, how to change your beliefs about those things. I'll give you an example. We opted out of Christmas. Second year.
Ooh. Ooh, wow.
Yeah. And here's why. Because I realized that part of my deposit system was doing good things for other people. And the second that I run to that, I'm realizing, am I doing this because I, well, I ask myself anyway, am I doing this because I really want to do this for somebody else, or am I doing it because it makes me feel good to do for others? Mm-hmm. If I'm doing that and I'm finding myself drawn or pulled to do that a lot, because I did, I used to do that a lot. Am I doing it because I need those deposits and I'm not managing my withdrawals, right?
Right.
I think what a lot of what we do is lives there. And so what my kids had asked us when we were kind of going through talking about it, it was after we did this book too, after we read this book as a family, they said, okay, well, it's not that we don't like getting gifts. It's that we don't want to perform gratitude because that was actually a withdrawal for them.
Wow.
Right. So somebody else is getting a deposit because they're getting them a gift, but they're actually getting a withdrawal because they don't really like what that person got them. Or they're kind of like, well, thank you. But yeah,
they don't want to perform the expected action upon receiving the gift because they're not into it. It does nothing for them. So to your point, that would be a withdrawal. Yeah.
Right. If you knew, here's a good one. If you knew somebody was just watching your video because they knew you and they wanted to support you versus somebody found your video actually helpful and they like how you created your content and they really appreciate that you're out here in the space creating content and putting this information out there, right? Mm-hmm. Feels different, right? Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. So that's where I would say managing those deposits, then it starts to expose your expectations around how you even assess the balance, right? And I just feel like it's helpful as a creator to not be so tied to validation in that way and not be pulled to be in this kind of like survival system of self-confidence, because that's really at its core that a lot of us are functioning from that place of survival syndrome when it comes to how we feel about ourselves and how we are able to show up.
Okay. So I have a question for you, and I think I kind of know where the answer is going to go, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So you talked about the vanity metrics and how we should not let the vanity metrics define who we are as creators. And this is something that I've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast. However, some of the way that a creator success is judged out there in the creative space is by the vanity metrics. For example, if you want to work with bigger brands as a creator, that brand is going to look at your channel and see how many views you're getting, how many subscribers you have. And the brand is going to use those vanity metrics to judge how much value that you can offer them as the creator. So it's difficult for creators to kind of detach themselves from the vanity metrics when other people and brands are judging them and their success by those vanity metrics and making decisions on whether or not the brand wants to work with that creator. So what can creators do to kind of detach themselves from, I guess I kind of asked this question earlier, but what can the creator do to kind of like put those outside expectations out of their mind and just focus more in on their mission statement and what they're trying to do with their YouTube channel as a creator?
There are so many layers to this. Okay. let's start from if the goal, what's the goal?
Yeah.
You got it. I mean, we got t-shirts that say it, and we weren't even the ones that created these. Our audience asked us to create what's the goal t-shirts. Because this is an important question, you got to, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. But how you're getting there really, really matters. So first I would say if the goal is to get sponsorships and to work with brands, you have to be able to sit on their side of the table. Would you want to sell your product? Would you want to put your product in a store that had no traffic? Because the whole goal is to sell your product, right? Your service or get brand awareness or whatever the objective is. If you can't put yourself on their side of the table, then you're not creating from a place that creates value for them, because that's what they're looking for. They're not just looking for views, by the way. They're also looking for, does your audience take action with you? Do they interact with you? Like how influenced are they by you, or are they just entertained by you, but they don't actually value what it is you have to say or what your thoughts are? Are a lot of the people that watch you, or a lot of the views that you're getting because of something negative, like all of those would impact how they see you and the value that they place on you. Their value on you is business. That's it. So that's first and foremost. If you're building a community and your goal is just to get brand deals, do you think your community cares?
Mm.
They don't care. They're not watching to help you get brand deals.
Nope.
And if they feel like everything you're doing is just for brand deals, then they're going to feel like all you're focused on is the money, and all they are to you is monetary value.
A number. Yep.
Right. And that doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel like community. That doesn't feel like shared values in the same way, right? They are trading their time for your information or time with you. And what are they getting back in return? If you could abandon them for a brand, if you could abandon them for a dollar amount, what does that say about you as a creator? Because if you do it for one brand, you might do it for another brand. I think the value is in first understanding what it is you're building. So what can creators do? I think there's levels. One is just getting comfortable with being on YouTube. For some people, that takes longer than others. And the reason why is, again, that confidence piece, right? I remember my first videos, and I remember watching that footage back, and I was like, who is this person? Who is this person? Like, this is not me on a regular day. This is me on camera. And I did not like it at all. Now, I was doing that because I was self-conscious. I was doing that because I was trying to put my best foot forward. I was doing all of that, being really positive and trying to share with some people use different vocal tonalities, right? And it's not how they normally speak. Well, people are going to pick that up, no matter how you try to polish it up, they're going to pick it up. Right. So in the beginning, if you feel like you are being performative, if you feel exhausted after recording videos, that is a high indicator that you are not functioning from an authentic place and that you are performing on camera. If you feel exhausted now, you are going to burn out later for sure. And you see a lot of people who are quitting right now because they drilled themselves into a bottleneck situation where they're like, I can't perform like this anymore. Or they were doing something that was performative because it performed for the algorithm, quote unquote. And they really didn't like it to begin with. It was just what was performing. So they felt like they had to keep doing it.
Right.
So being aligned in that way, I think, is important. But have a goal in mind. I'm going to build a community that is going to value what it is that I say, that is going to value my opinion on things, and I value them enough that I wouldn't bring any brand in that wouldn't be a good fit for them too, right?
Yep.
So then when you're building your community, you can already start to find what those markers are. How are they receiving me? What are the things that I could do to improve so that I have a better relationship with my community? And Pat Flynn's Superfans book is like a perfect blueprint for this, right? Your email list is important, is an indicator. There's a lot of different ways of kind of assessing how your audience is responding to you and if you're building a community or if you're just looking for views, because they're two completely different things. But anybody who's getting significant brand deals, anybody who's making a substantial amount of money as a creator, they have built a community, not just a channel.
Ooh. Oh, man. Angelique Didham, you have dropped some serious fire on the podcast today. I so, so appreciate you making the time. Thank you so much. If you guys want to check out the content that she does with her husband, I will have their channel in the show notes. Definitely go check her out. I'll have her Twitter down there as well. And hopefully this podcast will help you guys if you are experiencing imposter syndrome or just trying to be more self-confident. There was a lot of information dropped in this podcast today that should help you at least get yourself back on the right track to being more confident in what you're doing as a content creator. But you know your boy Viper will be back next week with another episode of Tube Talk presented by VidIQ.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.